Okay, here we good. We're good now. All right. We're going to continue our study in the wisdom literatures, and we're going to be speaking more on this book of Ecclesiastes. And I know as we think about this book, we don't always think about it as something that we would read if we're trying to make ourselves happy or cheerful. It's often a kind of a dreary book sometimes when you read it. It does, however, have things to say about life here under the sun that are incredibly important. And these things that are being talked about by the preacher are ways in which we can find joy in life, where we can find joy through the knowledge of adversity, that we can find joy through the understanding that things don't always work out the way we might expect or the way we might want them, that our expectations can be changed, that they could be programmed in such a way to where when something happens in your life or in my life, that our faith is not completely derailed, that we can know ahead of time, hey, you know what? This stuff happens. Things happen like this. And the preacher does an amazing job of presenting that to us, and that's why it's such a valuable part of the Bible, as most parts are, but we have this amazing resource from God to help us. And as I was thinking about chapter 2, that's where we're going to be this morning, Ecclesiastes chapter 2, I was thinking about how often we as people and people of the world and just people in general, how often we talk about accomplishing goals, setting goals, being happy, finding things that are going to make us happy. You know, if I had this or that, then I would be satisfied. Sometimes we say things like that, or we might say, you know, if I had that job, I'd be happy. My life would be complete. It would be fulfilled. Or if I had that thing, or even if I had that person in my life, we might think, well, that's what's going to turn the tides for me. That if I had that person or that job or that thing or whatever it might be, that is what's going to turn the tide and it's going to make me happy. That's happiness. In fact, we think about that so much as a society, as a culture, that over the years there have been stories, there have been books, there have been movies about people who are either looking for something that they believe is going to bring them ultimate happiness, or they finally received it somehow, right? I mean, it was given to them, everything that they would ever want. And I was thinking of some of those stories. We have the story of the genie in the lamp, right? I mean, that's an old one, isn't it? That's been around for I don't know how long, but we so many movies that we have about a genie and a lamp. And ultimately we think, well, you know, if I could find that, you know, I know exactly what I'm gonna wish for. And when I receive what I wish for, it's gonna make me happy. Right? If I had that, this is what I would do. The story never ends well, right? I mean, we've never seen it end perfectly. Like, you know, the guy gets everything he wants and it all ends well because the genie's pretty crafty in those stories. But it always ends with basically where they start, right? Or thinking about more historical events, how many people have set out to find the Fountain of Youth, right? I mean, that was a legend for a long time. And people thought, you know, if I could find that, if I could find the Fountain of Youth, I could become youthful and I would be happy the rest of my life. I wouldn't have to worry about anything, right? So we have things like that in our mind, in our society, in our culture that are just ingrained in us, that if we can just accomplish this, achieve this, receive that, do this, do that, that ultimately that's going to make us happy. And when I get to that point, my life is going to be complete, right? And we think that way. So what we're going to read about this morning is a man who achieved that. He actually achieved it. He got everything he wanted. He had all the resources were at his disposal. He was able to achieve everything he wanted to achieve, to obtain everything he wanted to obtain, to do everything that he wanted to do. And this is his story. This is what he observes through wisdom about where he was after having received, done, and accomplished all of these things. So if you have your Bibles open to Ecclesiastes chapter 2, we're going to start in verse 1. And it says, I said to myself, come now, I will test you with pleasure, so enjoy yourself. Excuse me, let me get to my slide here. Enjoy yourself, and behold, it too was futility. So he said, you know, I'm going to use my wisdom. I'm going to use my resources. I'm going to test this thing out. I'm going to see if these things would really make a person happy. Are these things really worth pursuing? Is this a life that really is worth trying to obtain? Is this really where humanity needs to go with these things? And he's going to use all of his resources, all of his wisdom, all of his authority, all of his power. He's going to try to accomplish these things. And he says, you know what? It was vain. Right? Remember we used this word last week, hevel, that Hebrew word that ultimately just means smoke or vapor. He says it too was smoke. It too was vapor. Look at verse 2. He said, I said of laughter that it was madness, and I said of pleasure, what does it accomplish? And I explored with my mind how to stimulate my body with wine, while my mind was guided me with wisdom and how to take hold of folly, until I could see what good there is for the sons of men to do under heaven the few years of their lives. So the preacher of Ecclesiastes, he set out to determine what all things a person can do in their life. And he says it's short, you know, it's a short little moment in time. It's not really that long in the grand scheme of things, right? But he's saying, what can a person do in a short period of time in their life that will bring them pleasure, that will bring them joy, that will make life worth living? And he says, I set out to find that. I set out to figure that out. I tested all of these things. I tried all of these things. And this is what I have concluded. He says, behold, it too was vanity, right? I mean, that's what he said. It's vanity. It's smoke. Laughter, he says, that was madness. He says, pleasure, what does it accomplish? I mean, what's the real profit from that? What's the end goal? What's the purpose of it? All these things that I do. So look at verse 4. He tells us some of the things he experienced, some of the things he did with his resources and his power and his money and his position. He says, I enlarged my works. I built houses for myself. I planted vineyards for myself. I made gardens and parks for myself, and I planted in them all kinds of fruit trees. I made ponds of water for myself, from which to irrigate the forest of growing trees. And I bought male and female slaves, and I had home-born slaves. Then he also says, I possessed flocks and herds and larger than all who preceded me in Jerusalem. Also, I collected for myself silver and gold and treasure of kings and provinces. And I provided for myself, male and female singers, and the pleasures of men, many concubines. But I want you to notice, as we're reading through that list, these are all the things that of the world, people of the world might look at and say, you know, those are all good things to obtain. You know, those are good things to do. Those will make you happy. That if you had the resources, that's what you need to do with it. You know, that's where you need to invest your time. That's where you need to invest your money. That's what you need to do. Because people would say that those things are going to bring you joy. Those things are going to bring you happiness. Those things are going to bring you peace. That's where life is, and that's where you need to be. And so he says, you know what? I tried that. I tried it. And using all of the wisdom that God gave me, I went out and I tried all of these things. But notice what he says. He says, I myself, right? That's a phrase that comes up frequently. I think it's four times that he uses that phrase and that word myself. I myself, everything he did, everything he bought, everything he built was for himself, right? It's all for him. He said, I did this and I did it all for me. I built these things and I built them for me. I planted and I planted for me. I bought and I acquired and I did it all for me so that it would make me happy, so that it would bring me pleasure, so that it would bring me joy, that's the goal, that's what I was looking for. And knowing that he has more resources than time, that's really the idea. So I've got all these resources, I've got all this money, I've got all this wealth, I've got all these things that I could do, but I don't have a lot of time to do it. And knowing that he has more resources than time, he reaches out and he grabs hold of everything his heart desires, everything that he could ever want, everything that a person would say, if I had this, it would make me happy. If I could do that, I would be happy. If I could build this and own this and have that and do this, that would make my life worth living. And he did it all. Verse 9, he says, then I became great and I increased more than all who preceded me in Jerusalem. He says, my wisdom also stood by me. And all that my eye desired, I did not refuse them. I did not withhold my heart from any pleasure, for my heart was pleased because of all of the labor. And this was my reward for all of my labor. Everything his eye desired. Right, all that he saw that he wanted, he got. All that he saw that he wanted, he got. He didn't withhold his heart from any pleasure. Anything that his heart wanted, he did it. No pleasure did he withhold. Whatever he saw and whatever he wanted out of life that he believed would satisfy him, would make him happy, would make his life good, would make his life worth living, he did all of those things. He took hold of all of those things. He participated in all of these things. And guess what? Here's the thing. He says, you know, I became great. I became great, even greater than anyone who has preceded me in Jerusalem. I became powerful and all, and yes, it was enjoyable. There was pleasure in that. It was good for me. It felt good. It seemed good. It seemed right. It seemed good. He found happiness. He found what he was looking for. And he says, but that ultimately, that was his reward. That pleasure, right? That happiness, that satisfaction, he says, that was my reward. My reward for all of my labor and all that I did, that was it. And then the preacher is going to sit back and he's going to think about that. He's going to mull over that for a little bit. He's going to say, is it really worth it? Did it really truly bring me continual happiness? Did it really satisfy the desire? Was it really worth all of the effort and endeavoring in these things? And look what he says in verse 11. He says, thus I considered all my activities which my hand had done and the labor which I had exerted. And he says this, behold, all was hevel. It was all vanity. It was all smoke, right? It was all vapor. It was all momentary, and he says, and striving after wind, and there was no profit under the sun. In other words, he's saying, guess what? All of y'all who want to seek for happiness, everybody who's chasing something, everybody who thinks that if they can just get to that one place or do that one thing or have that one thing or even have that one person in their life, all of you who think that if you can just achieve and accomplish your heart's desire, all of you who think that that's going to make you happy, that that's going to satisfy you, that once you have that, once you've experienced that, that's it. I mean, you'll be done. You'll be able to say, that's it. I've done everything. I'm good. I don't need anything else. The preacher's going to say, yeah, guess what? I've been there and I've done that and it was hevel. It was smoke. It was vapor. It didn't last, right? It wasn't sustainable. It didn't last. And I think we kind of know that from our limited experience. We obviously don't, probably good thing we don't, have the resources that the preacher of Ecclesiastes has. But we've done things like that where we thought, you know, if I just did this or fulfilled this desire or whatever and obtained that or got this, that would make me happy and I wouldn't need anything else. That's all I need. Just give me that and that's it. I'll be happy for the rest of my life. That we find that to be a lie, don't we? Because it never really brings continual happiness, continual satisfaction, continual pleasure, that too fades away. And there's always something else, right? I mean, there's always something else. There's always something more. There's always a desire to have even more than that and to move to the next level and obtain something else and do something else and be something else, that it's never truly satisfying. And it's like chasing after the wind. It's like smoke. It's like vapor. It is not sustainable. And that is where the preacher is. That is what he is thinking. If we could just have it, if I could just have it, that I would be happy. Is it worth doing? Is it worth living for? Is it worth sacrificing for? Is it worth all of my effort? And at the end, he just says, no, it wasn't worth it. It was fleeting. It wasn't worth it. He says, all was vanity and striving after the wind, and there was no profit under the sun. Now, as I was reading this, I was thinking about how similar this passage of Scripture is to what Jesus said in parable. If you turn with me to Luke chapter 12, Jesus gives a parable, and the storyline or the context behind the parable is seen in verse 13 of chapter 12, and it talks about a crowd who said to him, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the family inheritance with me." And then Jesus says to him, but he said to him, "Man, who appointed me judge and arbiter over you?" And then in verse 15, then he said to him, "Beware and be on your guard against every form of greed, for not even when one has an abundance does his life consist of his possessions." So that's kind of the context of the beginning before Jesus ultimately tells the parable he's going to tell. But as I was reading through that, I was thinking about dividing an inheritance. You know, I mean, we've been there. I've been there with my family. And I would venture to guess that most have experienced this, is when somebody dies and there's an inheritance that, you know, you may have had a good relationship with your brother and sister at one time, and you may have had a good relationship with your family, but when there's an inheritance involved, what generally happens? It gets really messy sometimes, right? I mean, it gets really, lawyers have to get involved, and papers have to be strewn around, and wills have to be found, and it just gets really, really messy. And apparently, it wasn't all that different back in Jesus's day, because we have these two who are owed apparently the inheritance, and one of the brothers just doesn't want to give it up. And so they come to Jesus and they think, well, Jesus is going to fix this. And then he comes back with this idea about greed, right? Because what Jesus often values more than possessions, and that you probably already know what this is, but it is relationships, right? Jesus often values relationships over possessions. That possessions, they come, they go, they're fleeting, they're hevel, right, as the preacher would say. But when it comes to relationships, those have value. Those are important. And to divide the relationship between two brothers over money is such a waste of time and resources. And so Jesus begins talking about greed. It even says, even if you were to acquire, even if you were to have an abundance, even if you were to have everything, like let's say one of the brothers just got everything. That's not his life. His life doesn't consist of his possessions, right? He may think it does, right? I mean, we think it does. You know, we think, that's me. I'm the one who has all the stuff. I'm the one that has all the money. I'm the one that has all the resources. And then we turn around and we think that makes me special. And Jesus would say, no, your life does not consist of your possessions, right? Look at verse 16. He says, and he told them a parable, saying the land, this is the land of a rich man, and it was very productive. So you can kind of imagine in Palestine during this time, that here's a man, probably Jewish, and he has all of these things, and he has this land. It's super productive, and it's just what everybody would want, you know, in this culture, is to have a productive land, more than he could possibly need. And in verse 17, he says he began reasoning to himself, saying, what shall I do since I have no place to store my crops? So, I mean, this is an extremely productive land, right? I mean, he's got an abundance. He's got more than he could ever need or even use or sell. He just so much stuff. He's thinking, what do I do with it all? And what do I do with all of my crops? What do I do with all that I am acquiring? And look at verse 18. And then he said, this is what I'll do. I'll tear down my barns and I'll build larger ones. And there I'll store all of my grain and my goods. I will say to my soul, soul, you have many goods laid up for many years to come. Take your ease, eat, drink, and be merry. Right? But I want you to notice the connection here with Ecclesiastes chapter 2 and what the preacher experienced and what this rich landowner is experiencing. But look at some similar words. The rich landowner keeps saying, I and my, right? I and my, I and my. Just like the preacher would say, I, myself, right? He's obviously rich. He's obviously very productive. He can obviously do whatever he wants to do and buy whatever he wants to buy. He really doesn't have to worry. The only thing keeping him from doing what he wants to do is the fact that his barns are just not big enough to hold all of the grain, all of the produce from the land that he is working. And he says to himself, you know, this would be such a good thing. This would make me happy. It would make me happy. It would be a good life if I just tore down these smaller barns and I built some bigger ones and I filled them up with all of the abundance of all that I have created in my fields, and all I have to do at that point is I can just take it easy, you know? I could go take it easy, I could eat, I could drink, I could hang out, I could sit in my hammock and drink lemonade and read some books. I mean, I'm just not going to do anything. And that's the life he wants. I mean, I want this life. Because the life of toiling over the field is hard work, you know? I mean, who wants to be in the sun? But if I could just build bigger barns and I can fill it up with the abundance, I can sit back, look at what I have, feel confident in my future, and say, I'm just going to chill, take it easy, drink my lemonade, read my books, do nothing. That's what I want to do. That would make me happy. That would be satisfying. That would be the good life, right? But, I mean, if we think about it, who wouldn't want that? I mean, we all kind of think, well, that sounds kind of nice, you know? I mean, I wouldn't mind doing that. How can I come up with an abundance, you know? Where could I come up with that kind of resource? And we think that way at times. And we think, you know, if I could just do this, then I can do what I really want to do. And I can be happy. And I can take it easy. And I can eat. And I can drink. And I can have the good life. But look at verse 20. Look what Jesus says. But God said to him, you remember before he was talking to himself, reasoning with himself. But God said to him, you fool. This very night your soul is required of you. And now who will own what you have prepared? Verse 21. So is the man who stores up treasure for himself and is not rich towards God. Right? I mean, that's a sad story, isn't it? For any standard, any life. But you're thinking about this guy who worked so hard and he had this. The productive land didn't just become productive by itself. I mean, this guy must have worked. You know, you can imagine seeing him out there laboring and toiling and working and working and working and all of the abundance that he's thinking, I'm going to go build some bigger barns. And you can almost imagine him building the barns himself and hiring laborers and working so hard with the mindset all the time that when this is done, when this is over, when the labor comes to an end, I'm going to get to sit back and take it easy, drink my lemonade, read my books, and just look at what I've accomplished. And Jesus says, guess what happened? God showed up. And he says, guess what? It's time. It's over. All that you did, all of that labor, all of those bigger barns, all those things you've accomplished, all those things you thought were going to make you happy and make your life easy so that you could sit back and do whatever you want to do, it's for somebody else now. You don't even get to enjoy it because your life is over. Right? But if it's the same idea, it's the idea that these things are so fleeting. That life is so incredibly short. That if we focus on only that which will make it to where we can do what we want to do and have what we want to have and be who we want to be, if that's where we are in our thinking, if that's where our mind is, and that's our whole life, is just building up to that moment that we can be there and do that and sit back and watch and be comfortable. And if that's it, ultimately our life is going to be called. That God is going to call our life to Him. And it will be over. And somebody else is going to come along and they're going to enjoy those kinds of things. And His labor, it's hevel, it's vapor, it's vanity. And then He says, beware and be on guard against every form of greed. Remember what Jesus said? Beware and be on guard against every form of greed. For not even when one has an abundance does his life consist of his possessions. And I think we often associate greed with just wealthy people. You know, this, well, that person's greedy because he has a lot of stuff. But it's not really the point. It doesn't take a lot of stuff to make a person greedy, right? I mean, that word greed doesn't necessarily sit in the group that has all the stuff. But even those who don't have can be greedy. Because we can be greedy in the sense that we are constantly setting our hearts to get stuff. That everything in life is at our disposal and we're just constantly thinking, I want more, I want more, I want to do more, I want to have more, I have enough. And that constant thought of continual more and doing and having and being, that's greed. That's greed. Never being content, never being satisfied, never realizing and focusing on what we're doing in the present, but always looking and saying, if I only had, if I could only be, if I could only do, that would bring pure happiness and joy, and never truly being content. More stuff. Bigger barns to store our grain. To what end? To what end? Jesus says, to death, right? I mean, that's ultimately going to be the divider. That's ultimately going to be the separator of all of humanity from this earth, that when death comes, who's going to get to enjoy your stuff? Who's going to get to enjoy your labor? So the pursuit of happiness, right, by satisfying the eye's desire, that's where the preacher of Ecclesiastes began with us, was his wisdom in pursuing those things, his observation of what that actually looked like. But the pursuit of happiness by satisfying the eye's desire and the heart's pleasure, trying to secure our own future, right? Because we do that too, don't we? We try to secure our own future by building bigger barns and acquiring more stuff and doing more things, right? So that we can take it easy, so that we can eat and drink and be merry. That's that idea, that whole pursuit, trying to find happiness and trying to find security in this life. The preacher concluded of himself, it was hevel, it was vapor, right? I mean, it seemed like a good idea at the time. It seemed like something that was worthwhile. It seemed like something that was worth pursuing. It seemed like that I should give it a shot. I mean, after all, I do have the resources and I have the time, you know, and my life is short. I might as well go ahead and participate in these things. And at the end, he says, it's not worth it. It's not worth it. You know, and why this is such a valuable piece of advice from the preacher is that we, as people who don't have those kind of resources or that kind of wisdom, we can waste our entire life trying to figure out if those things are worth pursuing. And by the time we figure it out, it's too late. Right? We can waste our whole life thinking, you know, if I could just do this or have that or be this or do that or go there, that I would be happy, that we can spend our whole life in that pursuit, focusing on me, 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 I, what is in it for me, myself? What can I build for myself? What can I acquire for myself? What can I do for myself? And then by the time we get to the point where we can figure it out, because we're not quite as wise as the preacher of Ecclesiastes, by the time we figure it out, it's too late. Our life is called. But for him, he had the time, he had the resources, he had the wisdom, and he was able to see it right away. And he's able to come to us and say, guys, stop. Stop your toiling. Stop your chasing. Stop your running. Stop your pursuits. Stop. Because I've been there. And I see what the end has in store for you. And yes, it might bring you pleasure for a moment. It might bring you happiness for a moment. But at the end of the day, when it's all said and done, it's hevel. So stop. Stop the pursuit. Stop trying to chase the wind. I think about what James says in James chapter 1. Of course, if you read the book of James, you're often kind of reading somebody who has obviously engrossed themselves in the wisdom literature. A lot of that comes out in James's writing. But James says this. He says, the brother of humble circumstances is to glory in his high position. But then he says, the rich man is to glory in his humiliation, right? The church is made up of all of these. Rich, poor, in between. The church is made up of all of us. And then he says, because like flowering grass, he will pass away. For the sun rises with a scorching wind and withers the grass, and its flowers fall off, and the beauty of its appearance is destroyed. And he says, so too, the rich man in the midst of his pursuits will fade away. And then again, I think this is true for all of us. This isn't just an attack on the rich. This is true for everyone. That everyone needs to think this way. Everyone needs to focus on the fact that in our life, in our pursuits, that our life is fleeting. Our life is short. Our life is smoke, right? That as we're living, it's such a short, incredibly short period of time that even we, as we're striving for things, we'll find out that the grass withers and the flowers fall off and it all comes to an end. That this is true for all of us, that the rich, the poor, and in between, in the midst of our pursuits, we're all fading away. We're all fading away. Our life is incredibly short. And that's not meant to depress anybody. That's not really meant from the preacher, I believe, to depress anybody. But just to point out a fact, that it's true. Right? That we should live our lives in a certain way. That pursuing those things may bring momentary happiness, but they are not the things that we ought to be pursuing. That if we pursue happiness by fulfilling our desires, that those desires will be fulfilled. That will be your reward, but it's going to be momentary. Right? In our effort to create a secure future for ourselves, I do believe that we need to think about making sure that we're good financially. You know, I'm all about saving. I'm all about investing. I'm all about making sure that whenever I get, too old to work, that I'm able to care for myself and my wife and be able to have things. You know, I think that's a wise thing to do. But if I get too wrapped up in that, if I get too focused on that, if that is all I'm living for, that's not life. That's not the life that God has secured for me. That our effort to secure our life ultimately is going to end with nothing, right? So how are we supposed to live? How are we supposed to live our lives? And I think James says it very clearly in the very end of that chapter 1, when he says this. He says, pure and undefiled religion in the sight of our God and Father is this: visit the orphans and widows in their distress and keep oneself unstained by the world. It's about what it amounts to, right? Living a life for God with wisdom, being religious people, according to this definition of being a religious person, right? It's not about self. It's not about me. It's not about obtaining everything for myself. It's not about having everything for me. It's not about getting stuff and building stuff and accumulating stuff and making me happy, right? And doing things that bring me pleasure. Although that's how the world lives, that's not what it's all about. But it's about this seemingly simple formula to say, God is watching my life. And I need to do things that are pleasing to Him. And you know what some of the things that please God? God's very pleased when He sees His people take care of those who are unable to take care of themselves. God's pleased when He sees that there is somebody out there, especially in this time that this was written, that there is a widow, there's an orphan out there in need, and God is pleased when He sees His people taking care of those who are in need. That pleases God. It pleases God when His people keep themselves from the corruption of the world, keep themselves undefiled from the world, that those are the kinds of things that please God, that these are the things we need to be looking for, that all of the things that we might strive for that bring us momentary happiness and pleasure are just hevel, they're vapor, their purpose is meaningless before God. But us, our purpose is to do more than that. It's to be more than that. It's to leverage our time and leverage our resources in such a way that our God and our Father will see us and be grateful and be joyful in the life in which we're living before Him. If there's anybody here this morning who has struggled with this, and maybe you're just too focused on this life, and you just needed this reminder to say, hey, your life is short. You know, you need to recalibrate your thinking. Maybe that was you and you need some prayers from this congregation that's available to you. Or maybe you have not even begun the life in following Jesus and you're ready to put Jesus on in baptism. Whatever your needs might be, if you would please come and stand as we sing.